Welcome to the System Mastery Post-Apodcastalypse, the only podcast where we eat a dead horse, 1d6 staving off starvations at a time. I'm Jeff, and as always, my co-host John is here with me. The year is probably 2019, and if anyone can hear us, if there's anyone out there in the world alive, please contact us and send us help or food or movie suggestions.
On today's episode, we'll be reviewing the only game known to have survived the crash, which of course is Haven, City of Violence. This will be our 214th review of the Lewis Porter Jr. Classic, a variation on D20 gaming, which has, of course, been lost to time and fire.
I once saw a D20. I will tell its tales to the children of my children.
That's right, Jeff. Haven is a storytelling system in which you take the role of a badass in a city on the edge. And personally, I've come to worship the book in the dark hours as a sort of idol of the god, Lewis Porter Jr. May his great works save us all.
I enjoy that it has a comprehensive system for art appreciation, a skill which is still useful today, for the purposes of identifying the ash glyphs in the city wastes. While a denizen of the paradise of Haven may have used it to recognize a painting, I, of course, use it to avoid the crash lands, where the flesh takers dwell.
As we've discussed several hundred times before, Haven, City of Violence, has a robust combat system that includes mechanics for cover and grenades, as well as pages and pages of information on the operation and sale of guns. I pray for the sweet click release of death at the barrel of a gun. Over and done, click, no more. No ripping, no moaning as my blood feeds the sands, right, Jeff?
Couldn't be more right, John. There's no greater dream than to die all at once, as so many did in the crash. They were the lucky ones. One might even say they rolled a critical success at avoiding the crawlers below and the night waters.
So today, we're doing a deep dive on page 127. Of course, this is a page we can all relate to, as this page is the example where Morgan has the drawback, traumatic flashback. Morgan, blessed be his name.
Blessings unto Morgan.
However, in this example, Morgan is able to eliminate his traumatic flashback drawback through seeing a psychiatrist. I, of course, saw my own psychiatrist, flecked with the spittle of madness, push a baby through a chain-link fence. I cannot unsee it.
At this point in the book, we begin the holy equipment section, in which Lewis brings us the word of knowledge that everyone needs goods and equipment to accomplish tasks, which we, of course, have taken to heart here at the Post-Apodcastalypse, where I have gathered into my satchels a collection of trinkets and mud-stoppered vials of quaffables.
There are also dollar prices for equipment and a table on this page. Now, these numbers are deeply confusing to some, as dollars long ago ceased their pre-crash usage and are now mostly used to start fires.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. We have to cease production before the night haunts with their ears on swivels catch our voices and make of us a prize.
Send us your questions and comments. Our address is a rock by the stream that passes the burnt wreckage of the Burlington Coat Factory, where the Shriekers dwell amidst the moldering belts. Of course, we'd also like you to support our Patreon.
Of course. Thanks, and have a great week, unless you're a flesh taker. Then, please, walk into the sun cracks and go to the Lewis. He awaits you in the halls of Haven. City of Violence. Welcome back to Afterthought, the podcast where every other week John and I get together, talk about whatever the hell we want. I'm Jeff, John's right over here. This is the companion podcast to System Mastery. That ought to be enough explanation.
Oh man, I've got mad burps.
You got them angry burps, yo.
Oh, dude, I am playing angry burps.
See, I like playing flappy burps, but it's real hard to find it.
Oh yeah, no, it got taken off the system for a while.
Yeah, is it back? Can you get flappy burps now?
I don't know.
I get them flappy burps, you know, when I drink like some cactus cooler.
Oh yeah, man, we are burps of a feather.
You know, I got I have orange soda, and then I bought some vodka that's got like pineapple in it the other day.
Ooh, baby.
Oh man, it's that kind of vodka that's not just like Pinnacle vodka that's pineapple flavored, but it's still clear. It has so much pineapple in it that it's like yellow, and there's pineapple bits floating in there. And when you mix them together, it straight up is a cactus cooler cocktail.
Oh my god, that sounds amazing.
It is so good. You should have one before you go.
Yes, I should.
Yeah.
I should definitely drink a few of those and then go drive home.
You live first of all, no, you shouldn't do that. Although I should point out that you live about a block and a half from here. So if you really wanted to, you could just walk home. Okay, so let's see. What did we review last week that would be the topic of discussion for today?
Well, last week was Testament D20.
Oh, that's right, Testament D20. You know, I was a little disappointed in our performance with that episode. I think we did things wrong.
Yeah, there was definitely things that could have been better.
Probably could have been better. You know, just in the future, we'll not do the things that...
But we'll definitely do more of the others.
We'll do the other ones, the ones that are the things that are the good things.
We'll have a generically better way to have things done.
That's our promise to you.
And speaking of doing things, when this airs, it will be our 3-year anniversary of the website.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, this will come out tomorrow, and that will actually be the 3-year anniversary of the site. August 8th would be when we started. I don't remember the anniversary I have with my girlfriend, but I remember when I started this show.
Right? God, that's terrible.
Bad. Well, yeah, but you're the same way, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, I can't remember your anniversary with your girlfriend either, so.
Fair enough.
You'd think I would.
I know. I mean, God, that was only about 6 years before I met you.
Right? Come on.
All right, so let's talk about something having to do with Testament.
Well, Bible's cool, right?
Bible's pretty fun.
Yeah.
It's a good book. Fun to read.
Yeah, it's good times.
Crazy shit happening in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah, normally I would have a topic ready, but mostly I'm just excited that it's 3 years.
I know, and we are getting ready to celebrate because the next episode of System Mastery will be episode 75.
I know, it's lined up so wonderfully.
Yeah, and long-term listeners are going to know that every 25 episodes, our episode is about Dungeons & Dragons, and we're doing them in order. We're skipping some of the obscure shit, so you're not going to get, like, Unearthed Arcana or whatever, but next one's going to be AD&D 2nd Edition, otherwise known as the first edition you played, probably.
Probably, if you're me.
Yeah, if you're me or John. Because that's the one from like the late 80s into the early 90s. So we're really excited about that. We've both been reading through it and getting ready to talk about it again. So that's going to be a lot of fun. So yeah, 3 years. It's been a huge hell of a fun ride.
Oh yeah, we've gone from nothing to something.
You know what's funny? The other day we answered a question on The Last Afterthought about when creators of games have gotten in contact with us.
Yeah.
And he was saying, there's been times when creators have contacted you. How did you feel about that? And I was like, oh, that's happened like 5 times. And the first time it happened was like on episode 4 of the show.
Yeah.
Was when Lee Garvin, the creator of that space game, that fun one.
God, come on. You're the one that owns this. You did this last time, too.
I know. I don't care. I'm not even going to explain it.
From the Floating Vagabond.
No, don't tell me.
I'm telling you.
Tales from the Floating Vagabond. I still have no idea how he'd even heard of it. But it turned out that wasn't what the listener was asking about. He was asking about the time that a Car Wars guy got in touch with us.
Ah, yes. Do
you remember that? When he was like, he popped in and did these sort of, I'm too busy to argue with you about the amazing games of the industry. I'm just doing a quick drive-by to let you know that they're great and that I'm very busy writing them. Good day.
Yeah.
Sure. Sure. I'm sure you're super busy over there at Steve Jackson Games on Car Wars.
Yes, I'm sure you're very busy trying to stay away from the blob that is Munchkin.
I know.
Because I'm almost certain that Munchkin Car Wars should be coming to us sometime in the next year.
I'm amazed it hasn't already.
Right?
Munchkin Car Wars seems like the logical extension of what is left of Steve Jackson Games.
Where is Munchkin Illuminati? Yeah. Come on, Steve Jackson. Just sell out entirely.
Munchkin Paranoia.
Just take all of your properties, slap Munchkin on the front of it, and go to town.
Munchkin Tune. I could do this all day. Isn't Steve Jackson GURPS too? So we'd have Munchkin GURPS.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. That just opens up the floodgates.
Well, yeah.
That means you get that gives you Munchkin Discworld, Munchkin Hellboy.
Well, yeah, but you're just using the Munchkin GURPS rules to play in those.
Ugh. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
I've got a +3 suit that contains my gaseous form.
Good.
All right. Well, anyway, would you like to answer a couple of questions?
I suppose it's only fair that after these many years, we answer some questions.
Finally, open ourselves up to the people.
For once, who
have literally run out of things to ask us, to the point where I've had to tell people to ask us questions that they would have meant for other things.
Like, hey, questions, guys, for different podcasts.
No, not just podcasts, just things.
Just things.
Just whatever.
You got a question for your grandma? Go ahead and ask us.
Yeah. You want to send in something to Dear Ann Landers? Send that in here. We've got the answer for you.
We got everything.
Well, no problem. You got a Savage Love question? I am, you know, we actually do have some questions this week. They're like straight up ready for Savage Love.
Man, I really thought you were going to say Savage Worlds questions, and I was like, man, don't do that.
I've read Savage Worlds. I'm ready to answer questions about it. The answers are always, this game seems like a big old math problem.
Well, you know, RPG.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of them are.
I know. I just finished reading it, and then immediately after it, Dungeon World.
Oh, man, it's a great read.
Oh,
except
yeah.
for that weird orgy scene in the sewer.
Yes, Stephen King's It, in which children have sex with each other in order to magically understand how to leave a sewer.
Yep. Good job, Stephen King. That was a lot of drugs you were doing.
Real weird, man. What's going on?
Yeah.
All right, first question comes to us from Mun Dangerous, and he says, why is seduction even a skill? Isn't it just a limited form of persuasion, deception, manipulation, coercion, or some other social skill every system already has?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. It really is. The reason it's there is because games have always had that charisma skill score.
Well, it's also just another symptom of that expansive skill list.
Yeah.
In the same way that you'd be like, oh, well, I've got like writing professionally and then writing poems and then writing short stories and all these different skills, instead of just going, I have a writing skill, whatever.
Well, the end result, the thing is, if you math it down enough, the result of seduction should be roughly the same as the result of persuasion, which is that you get a bonus against the person that you just used the skill against for the purposes of getting past some sort of block that they put in front of you, right?
Yeah, and that block is labia.
You know how those things just slam shut like prison gates? Yeah, that's solid understanding of female anatomy here at System Mastery.
Oh, hey, I've definitely had that. You know, you're talking to a lady, and then you hear that ka-chunk, and you're like, oh, I get it.
Oh, my game is inappropriately spit.
I am so sorry.
So, yeah, basically it is. And a lot of games have taken that to heart. You know, you have Apocalypse World has that sex move thing in it, for example, which doesn't necessarily have to be that you had sex with the target. It just can be, and the end result is still you get going forward, you get some kind of bonus.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So there are places where people have recognized that it is the case that seduction is a little too subdivided to really fit in a world where persuasion is also a skill.
Yeah, it just ends up becoming one of those things where, like any of those, I've got a bunch of random weird skills. If you invest heavily into it, then every problem looks like a nail if all you've got is a hammer.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, you're just going to be like, well, I seduce everyone I see.
Oh, yeah. When you get that Charisma 25, I am the moon scenario.
Yeah.
All right. So let's see. His secondary question. Also, seduction-themed hot dog question. You are both out to a night of Barry Bianco spritzers at the local Olive Garden when you are approached by a rather attractive pansexual hot dog. While either of you is in the bathroom, the hot dog attempts to seduce the other. What is the DC of the hot dog's skill check for seducing each of you, respectively? Is there a situational modifier if you know the hot dog has already tried to seduce the other? Lastly, do you eat the hot dog? All right, John, what's the DC for a hot dog to seduce you?
To seduce me? It's not very high. It's probably like DC 10.
So you can take 10 and automatically succeed?
Oh, no, not on this. You can't take 10 on anything that's social.
Oh, okay, fair enough. So he's got to at least roll, the hot dog.
Yeah,
does.
You got to roll.
Okay. All right, so it's a DC 10 to get you. If you knew that the hot dog had bumped ships in the night with me earlier.
Well, only that it had tried to seduce you.
Yeah, oh, okay, fair enough. There's no, but, oh, come on, John, you know how fucking perverted I am. There is no way the hot dog didn't succeed.
Well, I'm just saying, I was only in the bathroom. If you had consummated your seduction with that hot dog in the middle of an Olive Garden, please now, that is a family restaurant, a fine family restaurant. In fact, when you're there, you're family.
This is why I'm always so excited for you to go to the bathroom. Every time you do, I immediately score with anyone who else was in the room.
Anyone.
Every single time.
Every time.
I mean, you know the amount of times I have slept with Brian because you went to the bathroom?
Four.
That's correct, because you don't go to the bathroom very often.
No, you're
like
I don't.
A goddamn camel.
Just holding it
just
in
ruining.
There.
Ruining. You're blocking my game, son. All right, do you eat the hot dog? And follow-up question, do you eat the hot dog if you know I consummated?
I mean, obviously, for the first one, yes, it's only polite for me to also eat the hot dog.
Yeah.
You got to reciprocate.
Fair enough. Yeah, I also eat the hot dog. I eat the hot dog while you're in the bathroom. That's what I'm trying to get at here.
Oh, no.
Under the table.
See, now I'm just imagining you under the table in an Olive Garden eating a hot dog and just like
making sex noises.
Just the waiter comes by and you grunt softly.
Yeah, girl.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you got it the way I like. No mustard, some ketchup, some onions. Aw, oh, yeah.
God.
All right. Let's move on to a less gross question, shall we?
Let us.
Dear Kingpin and Mojo, I understand that one of you is a 10-year-old girl. Hey, that's me. However, it's been 3 years since you began inflicting system mastery on the unsuspecting public. Shouldn't you therefore be a 13-year-old girl?
How dare you try and put time restraints on this little girl?
Yeah. I identify as a 10-year-old girl is what it is, and I always have, even though I am a 10-year-old girl.
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm still 10. That's fine. Ancient Greek doctors posited the theory that all medical problems were caused by an imbalance of the four humors, blood, phlegm, black bile, and yellow bile. Since you know these things, can you tell me why ancient Greek doctors were so uncreative when it came to naming things? Couldn't they have given one of the two biles a more interesting name?
Well, you could have. But they were both biles.
Isn't one of them like pancreatic fluid or lymph juice or something?
Got to get that lymph juice.
It's that lymph squeezins. I think there is a better name for it. I think that ancient peoples even had a different name for it than just yellow bile. But yellow bile's the one that caught on and stuck around into the modern era.
Yeah, because it's way easier to remember.
Yeah. So there you go. That's.
I think they were just geniuses by making it easier to remember it, because people back then couldn't really hold four things in their head at one time.
People back then apparently didn't have a word for blue. Have you ever read that theory that Greek people or ancient Romans or whatever did not know what blue was?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, there are people that have, like, their concept of what a certain color is shifted along a spectrum.
Yeah.
So that they look at something that we'd say was blue and go, oh, that's in my spectrum for, like, purple or whatever.
I know. And the reason that people think that about the ancient Romans is from a couple of, like, descriptions of the seas being the color of wine or the sky the color of copper.
Yes.
So, I mean, granted, that's a whole thing with language and people and civilization where, like, for example, Russians don't have a word for blue because they think light blue and dark blue are very different colors with very different names.
Yes.
So, whatever. I'm not sure why I started talking about that. Next question. How many trees does it take to make a glade, and does it take more trees than that before you start attracting satyrs? For obvious reasons, I need to feed a glade satyr to my giant owl, so I'd like to know.
Well, you got to have at least 30 trees.
30 trees in a glade. I'd say maybe 40 if you want to go for a copse, and then you're going to probably need to double those numbers if you're shooting for a glen.
Yeah, now, yeah. Of course, you're going to need to be able to see the entire forest for those trees.
That's correct,
once you get onto, quadruple digit numbers.
Yeah, once you're in the quadruple digits, you're going to have a tough time seeing all the forest because of the trees, so you'll probably need to get into one of them fire towers or a helicopter or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. On a question actually related to RPGs, your episode on Feng Shui got me to wondering, what's the best system you know of to do a game with ridiculously hyperkinetic action? For point of reference, I'm a long-term fan of Super Robot Wars, a game series whose ramp into ridiculousness has gotten to such the point that it's now rather mundane to see a giant robot made out of three other giant robots shoot evil aliens with a giant gun powered by psychic power that's also another giant robot. Basically, I want games where I can punch someone 1,000 times, uppercut them into space, shoot a giant laser beam at them, and then fly up and collapse a pocket dimension inside their chest. Have you any suggestions? Yours vaguely, Omnicrom the Nowhere Man.
Not really.
It's tough. I'm guessing that's something you could probably... Oh, wait, I know exactly the game where you can do exactly the shit he's describing.
Are you going to say Dragon Ball Z?
No, Panty Explosion. Because Panty Explosion, the only limit for the description purposes of what you're doing is the creative faculties of the person that you have nominated to be your best friend.
Oh, yeah. So if I say, I'm going to try and punch the mean girl, and then I succeed, well, my best friend gets to describe it.
Yeah, about how your tiny little girl splits into three robots and shoots a super wave laser at someone that causes them to collapse into a waveform, and then that waveform emerges into a hell dimension where Hitler won, and just so on and so forth. And meanwhile, the DM's just sitting there going, God damn it, this game is ridiculous. It's cool, though, because eventually you're going to fail a roll, and your rival's going to describe you dying of pancreatic cancer.
While you fart an entire plum.
So there you go. It's probably Panty Explosion, right, John?
It's probably Panty Explosion.
When in doubt.
When in doubt, probably Panty Explosion.
I'm pretty sure that's what Occam's Razor means.
Yeah.
Yeah. The most correct answer is logically Panty Explosion.
Yeah.
Occam's Razor.
When all other answers are impossible, Panty Explosion remains.
There you go. All right. Next question comes to us from Jarnagua. And Jarnagua says, I don't know. I'm using people's Reddit handles. I'm going to get names like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Wraith has a second role where you play as someone else's shadow and oppose the character in various ways. What other systems have you come across where you were so oppositional to another PC?
Panty explosion?
So let's follow Occam's razor here and say panty explosion, which is the one where if you fail at a roll, your rival gets to describe how you fail and what happens.
Yeah.
Causing you to do things like emit a machine gun stream of super plum farts, which actually contain plums, that spatter that your rival's name into the wall of the gymnasium.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we've got the Duckman RPG.
Yeah, the classic Duckman RPG by Fantasy Strike Games.
Yeah, that's famous.
Yeah, that one, of course, uses a system by which failure is the only way that a character can gain experience.
Yeah, so that's of course, the most set against for the PCs.
Yeah, and the one that most people know about.
Yeah, I mean, it's the most popular of the ones.
Yeah, it was in stores for like 20 goddamn years.
I know.
Yeah. It kept going long after Duckman itself went off the air. They like just kept trying to sell this Duckman RPG.
Well, I mean, I think the last season of Duckman was mostly just coasting on the popularity of the RPG.
That is definitely true as well. Yeah. So that's definitely one. And then Panty Explosion. I can't think of, I mean, Wraith is a good example.
Yeah.
Most games really want everyone in the PCs to be on the same side. You know, the Dragon Ball Z game we reviewed mostly wanted you to fight your PCs.
Yeah. Well, there are, I mean, it's not so much what the game does as what a lot of players will do, which is, I know that sometimes when you have, say, more than a small group of players, they'll set up like, okay, here's the evil PC party and here's the good PC party and you're competing against each other.
Yeah.
So, I've seen that in D&D.
Yeah, I've never enjoyed those games, but I do know that they exist.
Oh, yeah. I've definitely seen that, or just competitive, like, you two have to go find a treasure, and it's two different groups trying to do it.
Right. Okay, follow-up question. Best condiment?
Best condiment is ranch dressing, especially on a well-done steak.
Yep, and the answer, of course, is Jeff's hot dog consummations.
You got me with that one. Good job. Right. You made me snorty.
And you'd think I would have gone with a simpler answer, like Clint Howard's heavy business.
You'd think, but that's mostly just for when I'm trying to get my business done. In a Clint Howard the way.
Need that sprinkling at Clint Howard's heavy business.
Yeah.
My answer is going to be barbecue sauce. I'm a big fan of various barbecue sauces.
Barbecue sauce.
Barbecue sauce. Yeah, that one. Next question. Dear Jeff and John, enjoyed the bonus content for Feng Shui. Would all of the Goonies count as scrappy kids?
No, I mean, some of them aren't very scrappy.
No, definitely. Let's see. Which ones of them do count as scrappy kids? Probably
Data?
Data, I'd say Mikey.
Mikey and Mouth.
Mouth, yeah, that's pretty much it. Then you've got a, I'm going to go ahead and call the Josh Brolin older brother character, whose name I never remember.
Yeah.
I'm going to say he's a karate detective.
Okay.
Let's see. Then you've got a girl who doesn't really contribute much.
She's a ghost.
She's a ghost. And then you've got Martha Plimpton's character.
An aberration.
Yeah, she's an aberration. Well, that's not true. She's definitely the hot one of the two of them. and then finally, we need to figure out what Chunk is.
Yeah.
Chunk is a Chunk?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I forgot that class was in the game.
Oh, yeah, the Chunk class.
Okay.
And then Sloth is the everyman hero.
Yeah, Sloth is definitely an everyman hero. He's very, very lucky.
He's like everyone else.
Yeah, everyone loves Sloth.
Yeah.
I saw, coming out of Gen Con this week, I saw pictures of some of our podcast buddies playing a Goonies miniature game.
Yeah.
It was like Goonies versus Ghostbusters or something. And my first thought was, oh my God, I want a Sloth miniature so I can paint him with a different superhero logo on his shirt.
Ah.
That was like the first thing I thought. I was like, oh my God, I want to see him with a Captain Thunder logo or the Flash or something.
Captain Thunder.
You know, I don't know why Captain Thunder got into my head just now.
That's like a Dr. Pepper knockoff.
No, it's what DC started calling Shazam after they realized that Captain Marvel had become more famous over at Marvel.
Yeah.
So they changed his name briefly to Captain Thunder, and then right after that, just to Shazam.
And after that, they started calling him Dr. Mountain,
yeah,
and then
Dr. Dew,
Mr. Shasta, and
Mr. Pepper's, Horace Pepper's Font of Ardor. Yeah, fair enough. But Captain Thunder was briefly Shazam's name.
Okay.
So it's not like I completely made that up.
Good.
Although I'm realizing now that both of the things I asked for are just lightning bolts on him.
Yeah, all I want is just lightning bolts.
I just want to see Sloth with a lightning bolt on his chest.
Come on.
It's my fetish, guys.
That's my fetish.
Make movies about Sloth. That's me.
Yeah.
All right, great. Moving on. Two questions. One of you hates a game and the other loves it. What game is this? And if it devolves into a fist fight, which one of you wins? Let's see. John loves most games, and I hate a lot of games, which would mean that the most likely thing is that it's some Euro trash board game.
I feel like we did answer this.
Did we answer this?
Did we?
Whatever. We're answering it twice, so it's some Euro trash board game.
Yeah, and I think that was the answer last time as well.
It totally is, because I can't fucking stand them. I will play them with John, but I will be on my phone or making a model or something the whole time, and I will pride myself on making the most random possible choices at every turn, causing other players who don't know what I'm doing, because usually it's just John who realizes what I'm doing, to think that I have some kind of strategy and spend their time analyzing it.
They're like, oh, I see he's doing this. I wonder if he's going for this type of victory. And I'm like, no, he's just being an asshole.
He doesn't know what he's doing.
He's grabbing at random.
He's just randomly assembling things into stupid piles for no reason.
As soon as I poke him, he'll look up and grab something.
Yep, that's how I play Euro games. You just got to stop me from looking at pornography on my phone, at which point I'll be like, huh? Oh, okay, I'll move the 600 thing into the 400 space, and I will take 3 tokens of squareness, and then I guess I'll set my prices at double maximum, and I will get back to my pornography. Have a good game, sirs.
And then everyone else at the table is like, ooh, ooh, yeah, okay.
Oh, he's giving me a lot to think about.
Hmm.
And I'm like, nope, sure didn't.
Still coming in, not last place.
Yeah, that's usually what happens. Proving that those games are a lot of flash and not a whole lot of substance is that I could just play it 100% random and usually do pretty good. All right, let's move on then. Dear 10-year-old witch and cartoon sausage in a bun. Hey, that's why I'm always 10. I'm a witch.
Yeah, and I'm a sausage in a bun.
That's what it was. And that's cutting me own throat.
Yeah.
Greetings from the sweltering swamps of the northern Midwest.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know. On one of your episodes of Afterthought, your intro parodied the famous Tappet Brothers radio show Car Talk. Oh, yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, it was.
Totally do that again. That was a fun one. As an avid listener of the Brothers Click and Clack, I found your rendition of their work impressively accurate in spirit and tone. And just like their show, I found it so atrocious I had to go back and listen to your entire backlog just to make sure you never did it again. Well, keep listening now, because now we're definitely gonna. Just put that in my head. That was so much fun to do. Let's see. Seriously, though, thanks for getting me through so many traffic jams. Never change or stop what you're doing. Okay. On that note, here's a few questions.
Please stop what you're doing and change.
On that note, please stop, collaborate, and listen.
Please stop. It is, of course, hammer time.
Halt, Hammershite. Which host, commentator, or frequent panelist on NPR would you have run a game for you, and what kind of game would they run? Note, you have to answer twice if one of the answers is Ira Glass.
God damn it. It's the only one I know.
Fine. I'm going to say that I would like to have a game that is run for me by media gadfly Mo Rocca.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I'm going to let Mo Rocca run the game. I feel like he's the kind of nerd who would actually know about D&D and be capable of running it. Let's see. John, you're going to have a hard time with this, so I can give you an answer if you want.
Yeah, that's good.
All right. John would like to sit down and be in a game, probably a game of Monster Hearts, when one of the other players is regular commentator on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Paula Poundstone.
Oh, there you go.
Does that feel good? You like hang out with Paula Poundstone and play some games?
Sure.
Okay, good.
That would work for me.
I think we're all set.
We're old friends at this point, me and Paula.
Have you actually met her?
Yeah.
I was going to say, at your comedy club, you might have met Paula Poundstone at some
point.
Oh, yeah.
No, I think I've said on the show before that I sat in a van and told her about an ex-girlfriend.
Nice.
Yeah, I poured my heart out to Paula Poundstone.
Paula, call him.
Paula, why do you not return my texts?
It's been too long. Why couldn't you get him onto Home Movies? Wait, was she on? Yeah, she was in that.
Yeah, okay. She was the mom.
She was the mom, yeah. Let's see. What is your favorite kind of apocalyptic event, and how would you go about surviving it until the aftermath? Let's see. I'm going to say the one where the nerds rise up finally and take back their strength against women.
Oh, yeah, that's the terrible apocalypse.
Yeah, the one that's it's never going to happen, and the easy way to survive it is to just keep doing what you're doing.
Just hold them at arm's length and let them swing at you.
Take their hats.
Play keep away with it.
They can't survive without their hats. Wait until they make that stupid anonymous threat at you. what are you going to do about it, nerd? Oh, we are anonymous. We are legion. You have been warned. Okay, Carl.
Great, that's good. Yeah. I'm glad.
That's cute.
I can't wait for you to go on to like /B and try and get someone to dox me.
Oh no, a DDoS attack.
Ah.
If it's not too private, what embarrassing phases did you have in your younger days that eventually stopped when common sense and shame caught up with you? For example, there was a brief sad period in college where I wore a Naruto headband in public.
Oh, man, that is way sadder than anything I've got.
I feel like we're making fun of you in the previous part of your question. Take their Naruto headbands. That'll stop the apocalypse.
Oh, yeah. Right in its tracks.
What is this? Are you from the Leaf Village? Oh, that's cute.
Oh, you know what village that is.
Yeah, it's the
My God, you've been infected.
It's too late. Don't look at me.
Turn around and you're just wearing the headband now. No!
Turn around, I'm like, John, help me. And you're like, Jeff, I think we should just be friends.
Jeff, I like you like a brother.
Okay. Let's see. Did you have any embarrassing phases growing up?
Well,
at a certain point, I figured it'd be a good idea to start a podcast about role-playing games.
Yeah, that's a phase that has lasted way too long.
I know. You'd really think I would have grown out of that nonsense by now, but here we are.
Trying to think. I mean, I
can give you the answer while you're thinking. I used to be a lot hotter when I was a kid. I played a lot of water polo. I thought it was cool because it was like 1996 to show up to school for about 3 weeks in a row in a white denim vest that I did not button closed and no shirt.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fucking wow.
I know, right? Fucking hammer, some fucking rave jeans, like some JNCOs, and a white denim vest with no shirt.
Oh, my God.
I made it work, because back then I had abs or a semblance of abs. But you know what? There's no way.
I had abs and rumors of abs.
There's no semblance of way where it's okay to wear a vest with no shirt unbuttoned at high school.
No. That is. God, how did you not just get sent home immediately?
I don't know.
How are they not just like, Jeff, what the hell are you doing?
No, my friends should have intervened at some point. They'd already let me slide on having wings for hair, which is another thing I did. So at this point, I think they just tossed it to the four winds and been like, whatever, he'll grow out of it. He'll grow out of dressing like he's on Saved by the Bell playing a bad guy.
Oh, yeah, that is true. Just having that image in my mind, I'm like, oh, man, you are definitely the bully in something that's going on in some story.
Yeah, I'm just one of the background gang members in the suspiciously multicultural gang.
Oh, yeah, you are definitely, like, just a step away from joining the Boys George.
The Boys George. They wouldn't take me in a white denim vest. You can- I need some black denim vest and some lace driving gloves, buddy. All right, so what was your embarrassing phase?
Let's see. I'd say, in high school, not really much of anything. I was just, you know, sort of a nerd.
Mm-hmm.
But in college, there was a long time where I just didn't like wear shoes and sort
How's
of gave
that different
up.
Than now?
Well, I just no, like I would walk to class barefoot.
Oh, okay. So now you at least wear sandals that are broken.
Oh yeah, I'll wear a broken pair of sandals, but I'll put something on my feet.
All right,
I'm talking like. I thought it would be cool to have calloused feet. I was like, oh, yeah, my feet are all calloused and I can walk around on anything. That'll make me cool. I don't know why I would think that.
I pictured you as the sort of person who spent a good year in a duster.
Oh, no. I'm the type of person that spent a good year in a bathrobe.
Fair enough. Okay. A bathrobe year.
Yeah, like
my bathrobe year.
Oh, yeah.
Starring Wallace Shawn.
The sisterhood of the traveling bathrobe.
Well, now the movie just sounds sexy.
Not with me.
Fair enough. But what was the sisterhood? I was like, oh, man, the sisterhood of the traveling bathrobe. That sounds like a really good graphic novel for, like, Paul Dini to do.
Yeah, no, there was also a definite point of time where I thought it was okay to go out in public in a bathrobe.
Oh, Lord, that's the worst.
Oh, yeah, I went to a Denny's in nothing but a bathrobe.
Especially because I've seen you in a bathrobe, and you look like the Penguin on his day off.
Which is exactly what I was going for.
So, all right. Yep, I think that's some deep embarrassment from both of us.
There you go.
Since Jeff has stated and proven that he's an avid chef, does John also have any hobbies involving making things, such as woodworking, model building, or making sculptures out of Mama Celeste pizza boxes? Yay, that caught on. If not, what would you see yourself getting into the most?
I don't have a hobby where I create anything except for smiles on the faces of children nationwide.
Okay, fair enough. And what would you see yourself getting into? A bathrobe.
Your pants. Yeah.
All you gotta do is go to the bathroom and leave yourself in the room.
Yeah, all I have to do is split in two, have one of me go to the bathroom.
And on your way there, I'll be like, Jeff, don't you cuck me with me while I'm in the bathroom. And I'll be like, I don't think that's the right usage of cuck. And you'll be like, yeah, don't worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think, because I've definitely done some of the war game miniatures thing,
mm-hmm.
and painting, I only like painting the large models, so doing like the centerpiece models where it's a big, either like a vehicle or a big monster, or whatever, that's fine, but I hate painting like all the little mans,
mm-hmm.
it's just annoying as hell.
Yeah, it's not a whole lot of fun, it takes a lot of work.
Yeah, so, I mean, if I was going to create something, I don't know.
Pizzas?
Yeah.
Poop?
Fat. I'd create...
more John.
Beard. I'd create more beard.
Foot calluses. All right. Last question here. How much... or from this guy. How much editing do you have to do to the raw audio files of your show? It's been less and less over the course of about 3 years. I can tell you that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no more do we have to cut out 5 minutes of racist screeds.
I got it all out of my system. Oh, man, do I ever hate the Irish, though.
Right?
Well, they're the worst.
No, the worst are the British.
That's true. The British are the worst. The British are the official worst of system mastery.
Yeah. Just put a stamp on it.
Fair enough. We've gotten a lot better over the years at either not saying and ah and smacking our lips so much, and also at not giving a shit about any of that.
Yeah. I definitely try to think a little bit more about how I'm saying things.
Mm-hmm.
And especially whenever we have a guest on or anything like that, and I watch them, I'm like, oh my God, you are awful at this. Stop that.
Yeah.
Terrible mic discipline.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's the problem. We shouldn't be having mic discipline on the show.
He's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, he gives a real good hot mic. That is true. That is true. A very good hot mic if that's what you're looking for.
If you're looking for a hot mic, then terrible mic discipline is your man.
Mr. Mic Discipline, comma terrible. So good. All right, there you go. Let's see. Next question from, that was from Tuppenny Upright. Next question comes to us from Blake Scott, who says, what are you guys reading besides RPGs? What books would you recommend?
Reading something besides RPGs.
Oh my God. Yeah, just yet, like the day before yesterday, I tweeted a picture of what I've been reading in my spare time, which is Dungeon World.
Yeah. God, I think the last thing I read that wasn't an RPG was like 2 years ago.
I know. Like, all of our spare time is taken up with reading RPGs.
I managed to finish The Long Walk by Stephen King.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great book. Absolutely love it. Fun story. I'd love to have seen that turn into something.
All right, why don't we spin this into a question from the time before time, John? What's your favorite book?
Favorite book at all, period?
Yes, period. Oh, a non-role-playing game. Because if you're like, oh, it's fucking Cinnabar, then that's just, that shoots the question.
Well, I'm like, well, obviously, World Book 4, Riffs, Africa.
Riffs Africa? Okay.
No, the, I was going to say, the one I've read the most, which is super weird,
mm-hmm.
is Through the Ice, and it is a book that was written by just someone no one's ever heard of,
mm-hmm.
but he died while writing it,
mm-hmm.
and then Piers Anthony finished it for him because the guy was a huge Piers Anthony fan.
Okay.
So he finished the book, so it's by the two of them, essentially.
Sure.
But I've read that more than basically any other book, which is not to say that I've read it a ton,
mm-hmm.
but I don't normally reread books, so that one I've read like 4 or 5 times.
Okay. I like the works of Neal Stephenson a whole lot, but I'm not going to say that's my favorite. Generally speaking, when I'm asked this question, I read the room first to see if anyone's going to care. And if I feel like it's old people, I'm going to answer Cannery Row, which is one of my...
If I feel like it's old people, I'm going to say the Bible.
Yeah, well, Bible. Cannery Row or Once There Was a War. I really like Steinbeck a whole lot, and I've read all of his books and many of them several times. But I'd say my actual true favorite is probably Neuromancer.
Okay.
I'm a huge Gibson fan in general. I would strongly recommend it to anyone who hasn't already gone through and read it all.
Also, let me say, the novelization adaptation of Master Blaster?
Yeah, yeah.
The old NES game? Mm-hmm. Oh my God. When I was in third grade and I read that, changed my life.
Nice. I tell you, I work for a Jewish charity organization now, and the other day, someone asked me what I thought of Rosh Hashanah. It was the marketing director, so he was trying to figure out what Rosh Hashanah calls up in my head, like automatically.
And I was like, definitely a wrestler from the late 90s, I assume.
Probably. There's probably a big Jewish wrestler.
Yeah, just a big guy with a yarmulke that wrestles, and his name is Rosh Hashanah.
Dude, every day he'd get up there and he'd tear off his white button-down shirt and then pop those sideburn things off. No, and I was like, oh, apples and honey, right? Apples and honey in a shofar, because that's like the stuff that if you're not Jewish, you know about Rosh Hashanah. So just out of curiosity, I then Wikipedia'd the shofar, and I found out that the person who blows the shofar at events is called the Baal something or other, B-A apostrophe A-L, and then like T-E-V-I-T or something like that, which is directly translated as Master Blaster. And I laughed till I nearly peed myself in the office. But there's an official guy in Judaism at Rosh Hashanah who's called the Master Blaster.
Wow.
It's the best. But no, I would say that if you're looking for an adaptation, probably RoboCop 2 had a really good written, novelized adaptation.
Also, for another real answer, The Dice Man, great book.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Also, really, really good stand-up performer. I believe your favorite, right, John?
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, Andrew Dice Clay, always been your favorite stand-up performer.
The best.
Yeah.
100%.
I mean, until you heard. I mean, because it was years before the two of them shared a stage, but nowadays, of course, it's hard to top these comedy stylings of one Jeff Dunham.
It's so hard.
Have you met him as well?
Of course I have.
Which puppet did he have with him?
All of them.
All right.
He had Sweet Daddy D.
Oh, I'm
his pimp character.
I barely remember that one because he seems to stick primarily to the...
He had Ahmed.
Ahmed and the dumb superhero. Those seem to be his two favorites.
He did not have the superhero with him. Okay. He may not have introduced it at that point, or he may have and he just didn't use it.
Yeah. God, I hate that guy so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was he nice in person?
Oh, he's super nice.
I figured he would be.
He's,
all right.
He's got a family. The family's nice.
I'd like to figure that the family
the
also...
The family assholes. All, him? Nice.
Every member of his family also has a dumb puppet on them at all times. Oh, wait. No, he has a... what's the most famous puppet? The fucking purple thing. Peanut?
Yeah, Peanut.
Okay.
The Woozle.
There we go. All right.
And then he's got his jalapeno on a stick.
On a steak. God, what a racist that guy is.
Yep, it's great.
Okay, moving on. That was from Blake Scott. Next question from Pawn Dreams. If you were to design a non-RPG that carried play session events over from session to session, so he's basically saying like Pandemic Legacy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Would you, and what would your theme be? So if you could redesign Pandemic Legacy as a board game that does it with a different theme than Pandemic Legacy, what would it be?
Yeah, okay. So a game that has consequences depending on how you played.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go with some kind of video game, maybe one that tells a tale, could be in any sort of property, really, like something with zombies or maybe fairy tales. And then like when you make a decision, a little pop-up will say that this person will remember that.
Oh, okay. I haven't played any of those, so it took me a while to come to kind of.
Yeah, I know. I know you haven't, which is why I figured I could milk that for a while.
You definitely could. I would make a homeowners association game. It'd be a board game where you play as a house on a suburban, like in a suburban neighborhood, where there's a ruthless, crazy homeowners association, and you can try to join it. You have to like be elected to join it, and if you do, that changes certain aspects of the game because now you have an additional decision tree that you have to make on voting and changes. But you also have to constantly battle between trying to stay within the strictures of an ever-changing homeowners association or rebel against it and do things like put up black curtains or put a pink flamingo in your lawn.
Oh, hell yeah.
And every month it just gets worse and crazier. So it's just the hell year of homeowners associations. So that's probably what I'd do. And if you're out there and you're a board game designer that's been working on one of those, if you steal that idea, just give me a free copy and I'll be happy.
Yeah, just give me a copy of Homeowners Association, the board game.
Yeah, so that'd be my choice. Let's see. Also, in that setting, is there a time when a big fucking deck of many things might work? Like, once per session, boom, deck of many things with a big swingy effect.
Aw, man. Let me tell you something. I love the deck of many things with all my heart and soul.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can work it into any game, literally any game,
yeah,
I don't care.
I don't care if I'm
playing Suburbia,
yeah,
and you put a deck of many things in there, I'm pulling from
it. I'm fine with it in HOA, which is what I've already named my game.
HOA?
HOA, yeah. HOA Legacy, we'll call it.
Yeah.
Homeowners Association Legacy. If a deck of many things is just one of the things you can have Amazon deliver to your house in the middle of the game, then yeah, go for it, and that would be awesome.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Let's see. Next question comes to us from Astro Potato. Hey guys, I really enjoy all the shows you are putting out. Number one, do you have any opinions on all the Kickstarters coming out for RPGs and board games? Do you see any similarities and differences between these industries and unrelated ones as far as how their Kickstarters are treated?
Not really. I mean, Kickstarters are sort of the same along the board, at least with things like RPGs. I feel like you generally have a slightly better chance of getting it.
Yeah, I mean, granted, my Tales from the Floating Vagabond hasn't shown up yet.
Yeah.
So I'll harp on that for a second. There we go, harped.
And harped.
Uh-huh.
But I feel like with those, most of the time, the RPG ones are like a labor of love, and they're mostly already done with it anyway.
Well, yeah, and I think that's a big thing to point to make about Kickstarters. We're old enough to remember when it was getting started, of course, and when it was getting started, everyone was like, no, this cannot become the engine of pre-sales. People can't just use this to pre-sell shit that's already done. And of course, that is like all it is now.
Oh, yeah.
It's 100% like, hey, I guarantee that there is a quality product that is already made, and I need this Kickstarter to ship it to you.
Yeah.
And that's what people want. They don't want to buy products on spec. So it turned out that what everyone was afraid Kickstarter would be, it has turned into, probably for the better.
Well, yeah, because otherwise you're going to start getting into that Star Citizen territory where they've raised millions of dollars and there is nothing.
Yeah, or that attempt to discredit Anita Sarkeesian or whatever that was a thing. Remember that? They're like guys like, I'll make a movie about how she's terrible. No, they won't. They'll just keep your money.
Yeah, no. And that's that's what Kickstarter, why it's gone from, this is going to help me make some project and you can help me do it, to, hey, I've already done some stuff, and now you can buy it.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big fan of Kickstarter in general. Of course, I'm a huge fan of Sentinels of the Multiverse. I own it all. I just recently did the big Kickstarter to get a whole bunch more shit from them coming in soon. Of course, our friends over at One Shot RPG and Campaign, who made their Noisy Person, or Paracosm Press, I guess I should say, who made their Noisy Person card game. Noisy Person Cards? Yeah, that's the full name of it.
Yeah.
So that went really well for them, and I'm glad to see them get some such success. That's awesome. So, yeah, I'm a fan of Kickstarter. I think it's doing great things for the industry, which is good because the industry was suffering.
Well, yeah, and it's hard for a brick-and-mortar store to really say, okay, I'm going to take whatever dumb RPG and put it on my shelves because it's shelf space that isn't going to something else. And especially for RPGs, there's very little incentive for people to pay any sort of retail markup because they're like, I've already got a system I like, most likely, if I'm looking at a store.
Yeah.
So, meh.
Yeah, Kickstarter really helps out with that. It's not great for the stores, but, you know, it's great for the industry in general.
But the stores aren't really carrying any of the weird indie ones anyway. So if you're into that, Kickstarter's great because you can get it that way.
By the way, if you're San Diegan, I can't tell you how excited I am to learn that At Ease Games, one of our three or four major game stores here, has just expanded into what we all think that game stores should be in the future, which is bars where you can play role-playing games. They're just now going through that expansion process, and you're going to be able to drink a cider and play a role-playing game at Ease. Very excited.
Yeah.
So, good for them.
Well, it's especially good for them because they're right next to a military base, so that's going to be great for them.
And in Nickel City, which means there's going to be drunk playing of arcade games very soon.
Oh, yeah. You are going to stagger over from the At Ease Games after your half-elf bard has been killed, and you're going to go to Nickel City and get out your aggression on some skee ball.
Oh, I'm going to cry it out so hard in miniature bowling. Yeah. All right. Let's see. For long-term goals, would you ever consider doing a crowdfunding campaign for the Blimpleggers RPG when it gets far enough along in development to start official production? Oh, man, remember when we were working on that?
Oh, man, remember when we had time to work on that?
We both got full-time hard jobs since we started writing Blimpleggers.
So
it's sitting there. I have a lot of written stuff. It's almost all story material because the idea was to write it as a Fate setting, so there wasn't a whole lot of hard rules that were required.
Oh, yeah, but we have so much stuff written at this point that's just Google Docs.
Yeah, just I have like six different Google Docs on races and geography and politics and intrigue and how the spell system worked and what booze did in the setting. There are a couple things holding us back from turning it into a real thing. One of them is time. We just don't have any. Another is artists. We don't really have artists on site who want to do that sort of thing, especially for, you know, no money.
Oh, yeah.
So it would be very hard for us to turn it into a product that we could even market, because marketing is mostly a, hey, look at this amazing picture of these cool dudes on a blimp, which we don't have.
Yeah.
So that's the reason that you probably haven't heard about Blimpleggers RPG in a long time. We kind of stalled out on it, but it's definitely something that we both still very much love.
Yeah.
Conceptually, and, it's awesome.
You know, thankfully, we didn't do a Kickstarter and then just not do it.
That is true. If we ever get to the point where we have a team assembled that wants to work on it, that actually produces results and so on, then yeah, we'd probably consider Kickstarter as the way to go, because we also don't know anyone who works in production.
Yep.
So Kickstarter would be the only way we could go if we ever got to the point where we had to. Less RPG related, do either of you guys have any obscure TV shows that you like, but few people seem to know about or remember?
I mean, obscure America.
That's a dumb show you liked. Slitters? Slither?
Don't hate. One, Slither is a great movie.
It is an awesome movie.
Two, Sliders is amazing.
Slimers?
Yes, Slimers as well.
I'm just trying to, because I don't remember that show at all. I feel like it's a very obscure show.
Dude, Sliders everyone knows.
Okay, how about Jericho?
Jericho, less people know.
Yeah. So Jericho's probably a pretty good choice for someone. Maybe not for me.
Maybe. Let's see, what else? I mean, there are ones that are huge in, like, England that nobody knows here if I ask them. Hmm. Like, if I say QI to most people, they're like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, QI. Quite interesting.
Is amazing, and I love it.
It is awesome. I will sit there and watch that for hours while I'm folding laundry or something.
Yeah.
It's the perfect show for folding laundry.
It is a great background show to be like, huh, that's quite interesting.
Yeah, exactly. QI and the Big Fat Quiz.
Yeah.
Big Fat are both perfect laundry folding or falling asleep shows. They're right up there with watching the Best of the Worst or Wheel of the Worst stuff from Red Letter Media. They're like the perfect thing to put on quietly in the background and laugh at occasionally. Yeah. So there you go. Yeah. I would also, that's probably going to be my answer, is the content output of Red Letter Media.
Oh, okay.
Not necessarily the rapist review Star Wars ones. Those are a little creepy.
Yeah.
Or they recently did one. I feel terrible about this because I'm a huge fan of them in general. But then they did this one recently called Scientist Man Explains How You're Racist or You're Sexist If You Like Ghostbusters. Or You're Sexist If You Don't Like the New Ghostbusters. Because they didn't like the new Ghostbusters. And I guess they got a bunch of angry emails from people who are like, well, obviously you're sexist. So instead of just, you know, not doing anything, they doubled down and did a sarcastic scientist character who explains why it's sexist to not like Ghostbusters.
Good.
Like, no,
great.
Guys, just shut up. It's okay to not like Ghostbusters.
Yep.
It's fine. But the follow-up step to not liking it, just shut up. Put your review out about how it's bad, because you're a review show, just like us, and then shut up.
Shut up about it. Shut up, you face.
Quit arguing. It's not worth it. You just yell. It's like trying to beat up the ocean when you're seven. I mean, granted, I know that's not a universal experience.
I mean, granted, I did beat up the ocean when I was seven.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It still remembers it. And I know that's not a universal experience to a bunch of dudes from Milwaukee. So we'll just let it slide. There you go. Let's see. Okay, next question. Have you guys seen the brouhaha over the OSR versus story game communities? Would you adjudicate for us? That's another question from Jarnagua.
I have not until this question was asked, and then I looked. And...
I gave an example on the show or in Reddit where this question showed up that I'd let John determine if he wanted to talk about it or not, because I have followed it to a certain extent, and that extent is I've decided that I hate the entire controversy, so anytime I see the names of anyone involved in it, so like your Frank Trollmans or your Zach S's or whatever, I just glaze over and don't read the rest of whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
It's so internecine.
It's weird to me because... on the one hand, I kind of want to be behind the story game people because I'm like, you know, I do think there should be some more diversity in gaming. I do think we need better representation for things. Like, that would be nice.
But they don't want it for gaming. They want it for a subset of gaming played by enough people to maybe fill part of an urban target.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't... being angry at the OSR people, I'm just like, why? It does... There are... a tiny, tiny group of people. Who gives a shit?
Yeah, it's like getting really mad about the talk page on a Wikipedia article. It's like, man, these people sure do seem to hate each other about the definitions of Pahoehoe lava versus Ah-Ah lava. Man, there's like 80 pages of arguing back and forth on this thing. Do I have an opinion about it? No, of course not, because it's just some nerds having a nerd fight.
Yeah, I don't know enough about it to really make any sort of comment aside from... all right.
It's hard to tell what the initial fight was. It's like, okay, so one group wants more representation of women and minorities in gaming, and the other side doesn't like certain people on the first side who said mean things about the people on the other side. I don't know. It's like, I can't tell what they're fighting about. I can't tell what the two sides are.
I don't know.
Because a lot of it seems to have already boiled down into just personal squabbling about people's personal traits involved in the whole thing. And I don't even know what that is. It's like, oh, well, that guy's just a sexist because he said this, and this guy is always launching attacks with his minions or something. And I'm like, okay.
And they only have one hit point.
I don't know.
No,
so
the thing for me is I'm like, it feels, like you were saying, more like attacking specific people for being an asshole or not being an asshole, rather than like, oh, the ideology of whatever group is this. I'm like, okay, you don't hate, say, story game people. You just hate very specific people from it.
Yeah. Yeah, so it seems to have long ago passed the pale of being something that's easy to parse out and explain to people. I couldn't begin to explain it to people. I constantly forget what OSR stands for.
Yeah.
I know it's just old school role playing, and I know that it's all these people who are like, we're playing games the way they were intended to be played in the 70s. I'm like, why? The 70s are terrible. Name one good thing from the 70s that isn't Star Wars or Jaws.
Oh, man, you had to qualify it.
Carefully, very quickly, I got through Star Wars and Jaws before obvious people could be obvious about it.
Yeah.
But after that, what do you got? Shitty mustaches, gross hairy sex, wood-paneled sheriff's offices. The 70s are garbage.
Yeah.
They're just garbage. And you know what? Their role-playing games, not that impressive. And plus, every time I look at what counts as OSR? Dungeon World is supposed to count as OSR.
Really?
Yeah. People are like, it's OSR because it's got the same, like, oh, you go into a dungeon and maybe it changes a local town, and then you go back into the dungeon again and keep getting treasure, and there's only like 7 classes. That's what counts as OSR. No, Dungeon World doesn't count as OSR. It would make no sense to a person from the 70s.
No, you would go back there and show it to someone from the 70s, and they would hail you as a witch.
Yeah, so I don't know. The whole thing's just madness and shenanigans to me. Do I support more inclusion in gaming? Of course. Do I care that there are people out there who think it's a super cool thing to simply not progress as far as gaming development? Sure, have fun with it, guys. It doesn't matter to me. Someone needs to keep using those avocado-colored towels.
Yeah, you know what? If you like weird old games, play your weird old games.
Fine. That's what all we do is make fun of weird old games. I've read more of them than any of those people. God. All right, well, moving on. Sorry, Jarnagwa. We're just not equipped to answer that question in a satisfactory manner. next question from Jagnomen. Have you guys considered writing a full-fledged RPG system and setting and starting a sub-podcast that takes us through your process? That'd be gnarly.
That would be very gnarly.
That would be cool. You know, that's probably the only way that we'd actually make any forward progress on Blimpleggers.
Is to actually do a podcast every week.
A podcast that forced us to.
Yeah, we'd have to have something every week to show for it.
Yeah, that would be the only way that we'd be making forward motion. I don't know. I have never considered doing a podcast where we wrote a game before. I'm confused at what point we switched over from being charming jackasses who don't know anything about games to being like experts of them.
I don't know. Probably around year two.
Because I don't think I'm equipped to write a role-playing game. Do you?
Oh, I'm totally equipped to write a role-playing game. Let me tell you about my breakage tables.
I mean, granted, I would love to, and maybe we are the right people to write a game at some point. It's not like if there's a rule against it. There certainly isn't a thing you have to pass before you're allowed to write a role-playing game.
God knows we have read enough games that proves that there is no barrier to entry on writing a role-playing game.
That's true. So, I don't know, maybe. Would you guys like it if that was a new Kickstarter, or not Kickstarter, a new Patreon thing? Jeff and John write a role-playing game, the podcast? Maybe we could replace something with it. It could replace old Afterthoughts or, I don't know, something. So, if that's something that's of interest to you guys and you want to see us actually write out and develop Blimpleggers and the Cheese Dudes card game I've been working on, then let me know and I'll try and work it into the system. That'd be kind of fun.
We'll get that Hoa board game all set.
Oh yeah, the Hoa board game right next to the Cheese Dudes card game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever. We have like a million half projects. Okay. Next question from Rel Mill. If a music album were to be made into an RPG setting with the same title, which would make the most interesting one to play in, and what or who would be the setting's ultimate big bad evil guy? An album title.
Okay. So Thriller.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the great Jackson himself would be the big bad.
Okay. I'm gonna do a naval game called Damn the Torpedoes.
Okay.
And the villain would be the Germans.
Ah.
Yeah. That's a Tom Petty album, Damn the Torpedoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the follow-up, Southern Accents, where the villain is the South, I guess. Who
all of it.
Suddenly got a bunch of submarines.
Ah, the Southern submarines.
Southern Subs. That's going to be the name of that. Ooh, I'd also like to play in Whipped Cream and Other Delights.
Oh, I was about to say, Southern Subs sounds like a great restaurant. I would go to Southern Subs all the time.
Oh, man, that does sound awesome.
Dude, I want to get a sub that has like some nice Southern pulled pork in there.
Oh,
ooh,
man.
Ooh, baby.
Collard greens.
Baby, you got a sandwich I want.
Oh, man, that does sound amazing. Had a hot tamale sandwich. Oh, my God.
Oh, man, I gave this girl a hot tamale sandwich once. You know what I mean.
I do. And, you know, there's no cure for syphilis. What you did was horrible, John. All right. Let's see here. If the members of a band were to be the PCs in the above setting, what band would be the most successful in defeating the BBEG? Oh, okay. So in the two settings that we just described, Thriller and the Damn the Torpedoes.
Yeah.
Who would be the best band to go in there as PCs and defeat the enemy?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and say Dragon Force, obviously, for mine.
It's a force of dragons.
Dude, Dragon Force is amazing. And even if you just take them at their musical stuff, they're just fantasy adventurers. So they would fight a horde of zombies.
Okay. And I know the exact right band to determine or defeat German submarines. And that, of course, is the Aquabats.
Obviously.
Right? Because they have Aquabat powers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you got Ricky Fitness and the MC Bat Commander and Jimmy Robot and all those other characters. They're just all superheroes that would handily destroy Russians or German subs and Russian subs. Why not?
Why not? Who cares?
Yeah. Whatever. Moving on. So let's see. Next question comes to us from Pope Guilty.
Ooh, Pope.
Pope Guilty says, can we take your praise for the Stranger Things soundtrack to mean that you're both into synthwave? And if not, why not? I don't know, because that's not synthwave?
And also, I don't care.
Well, okay, let me go this way. I love that Simpsons Wave shit that I've heard a couple of times.
That Simpsons Wave shit?
Have you not heard of this?
No.
Someone wrote a bunch of synth, or I'm not sure it's someone, it's a bunch of people, it's like a meme, where they take old Simpsons and they color it all purple and blue, and then they play synthwave music over it in interesting ways that kind of line up with the show. And change the show. It's adorable. You should check it out. It's really funny. But I am a big fan of synth music in general, and I have heard some synthwave, and I find it, you know, it's fun to listen to. I wouldn't necessarily buy an album of it, but it's great if I'm playing a mindless video game to sort of have mindless music to drive along with.
See, that's the thing for me is I love that music, but it has to be with something. Like, I would never go, oh, I'm going to put on some synth music
and sit quietly with a snifter of brandy and my other hand on a wolfhound as I gaze into a fire.
Yeah, that's not what's going to happen.
I don't know what type of music is the right music for that.
Madonna.
Oh no, it's Herb Alpert.
Yeah.
Get my hand on a wolfhound, stare into that fire. Yeah, that sounds right to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's see here. Nothing wrong with synthwave. It's just the sort of thing that's best enjoyed quietly while you're doing something else.
It's best enjoyed on mute.
Yep. It's got a face for radio. Let's see. Pondream says, as DenCon starts to get its legs... DenCon, by the way, the largest convention in the Denny's by our house.
Yeah, in the Denny's that we were in.
That we were in a Denny's, which automatically made us the largest gaming convention.
At that Denny's.
Hashtag DenCon.
Oh, DenCon.
As DenCon starts to get its legs under it and plans for 2017, a couple questions. Note that these are constructive criticisms versus nerd rage table flipping. I rather enjoyed DenCon. Number one, will the organizers be reaching out for some more major studio support for things such as exclusive trailers, etc.? There's been some concern on the DenCon floor, hashtag DenCon, that the spoiler section is just a guy with a laptop watching trailers, some of which are 5 or more years old on YouTube. Okay, so yes, we've reached out to a number of major studios, let them know that DenCon exists and is definitely happening,
yeah.
And we've made an open invitation that not only will they get an exclusive platform to display new trailers if they come to next year's DenCon, hashtag DenCon, but also, by the way, hashtag DenCon, where the Den stands for Denny's and not Denver.
Yeah.
That's very important. That's a full hashtag. You should use that whenever possible. But also, we've established that if any of them do come, I will personally buy them chocolate chip pancake puppies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, we're talking the puppies, not the full pancakes here. Let's not get crazy.
No, we're talking...
We're still an indie con.
Well, not only that, but it's System Mastery, home of the Ball Jack.
Yeah.
And so Denny's, which ripped off the concept of the Ball Jack from competing restaurant Cheese Dudes, as has been well established and is still under litigation, so I can't speak about it to too much more effect, the Ball Jack is sort of the unofficial mascot of DenCon anyway.
Yeah.
Right. So, yes, we have put the word out to DC, to Warner Brothers, to Marvel Studios... to whatever company it is that holds the rights for Namor, I think is Universal. We're just letting them know, if you show up at that Denny's 9:30 at night on a Tuesday, you know, when two knuckleheads are up to no good, we'll watch those trailers for you.
Yeah, I mean, if you show up with a tablet and you want me to watch a trailer, I'll do it.
Yeah, that's pretty simple. Number two, have you guys looked into different promos for various games in 2017? It really seems like my plaid hate promo is A, misspelled, B, nothing plaid hat has sanctioned for casual or tournament play, and C, actually just an old Candyland gingerbread kid pawn with a handwritten stat card that says you can totally play this with that Dead of Zombies game. So, we do plan a lot of exclusives for next year's DenCon. For example, you can get a 3-pack of crayons and a children's menu on which to draw with, and that menu will have been personally drawn and inked by none other than Mike Mignola.
Yeah, now you'll only be able... Yeah.
Mignola. Okay, we're saying Mignola.
Amygdala.
Yeah, it's Mike Amygdala.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the first thing, is Mike Mignola signed children's menu art.
And, of course, you will be able to get any of your things signed by Bruce Greenwood.
Who's a real person, as it turns out.
Yeah, super high supporter of the DenCon, of course.
Yeah, an early adopter of the DenCon philosophy.
And he will sign anything you put in front of him. He signed my pancakes.
Yeah, he signed pancakes with syrup and then again with a pen.
Yeah.
Just didn't even care that he was pushing a pen into pancake syrup.
I mean, it did taste a little inky when I ate them, because of course I'm going to eat them. I mean, what am I, a savage?
Can I tell you how amused I am that for years I called Bruce Greenwood, or Ed Greenwood, the author of Forgotten Realms, Bruce Greenwood, because I just forgot. And then it turned out that Bruce Greenwood is also a different famous person, and I had no idea. He's the guy who voices Batman now after Kevin Conroy stopped. He's also on Canadian television all the time.
Wow.
He's like an actual famous guy. I had no idea.
Aw, he's Canadian famous.
I know. Most Canadians try to get American famous, and so many of them succeed.
Yeah, he just managed to get Canadian famous. Don't worry, buddy.
By the way, at next year's DenCon, virtually every time we go into that Denny's, there's a bearded guy in there. That bearded guy could be any number of famous old cantankerous, like, racist comic book artists, so you should probably ask if he is.
Probably.
Yeah. You should just walk right up to him and be like, hey, man, did you write that one where Batman's real old and he beats up Superman? Because I think you are.
Hey, you look like a weird wizard. Are you Alan Moore?
Yeah, that's what you should do. Are you Alan Moore or George R.R. Martin, depending on how fat you are? Just try. You never know at DenCon. Hashtag DenCon, where the 10 stands for Denny's and not Denver.
Yes.
All right. Next question comes to us from Ryan Marshall. Almost done here. Having reviewed 70-some-odd games at this point, what's been your biggest disappointment? What did you go into expecting it to be good or at least tolerable, only to be offended by how bad it actually was? Anything particularly memorable?
I'm going to say the one that probably was the most disappointing to me was Big Eyes Small Mouth.
Oh, okay. I was going to follow Occam's Razor on this and say Panty Explosion.
That was way more impressive than I thought it would be.
Well, no, it had interesting rules, but it had nothing to do with the title.
Oh, yeah.
I expected it to be all pervy Japanese, like, high school grope-grope, you know, like every anime. But no, it's got nothing to do with panties whatsoever. You never find the word panties in the book unless it is followed by the word explosion and then a trademark symbol.
Yeah. Now, I think it was Big Eyes Small Mouth that most disappointed me, just because I don't think I got enough out of that game. Like, there just wasn't enough in there that I thought it was good. I wanted more, like, weird giant robot shit and more anime stuff, and it just didn't deliver for me.
Right. Also, the same question for Movie Mastery, if you are running low on questions and need to pad for time. We're not, but I'm going to answer that question anyway. John, have we seen any movies for Movie Mastery yet where you were really excited going in, but then you came out real bored?
You know, I almost want to say Wizards.
I was going to say Wizards, too, because it should be trippy animation, right?
Well, I was thinking, okay, it's Bakshi. I only really know you from a couple things, but I didn't hate that, but it was mostly because you were sort of paired with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, okay, it's a weird wizard movie. I'm cool with that. That's fine. And then watched it and was like, this is atrocious.
So, yeah, I agree. I'm going to say Wizards for that as well, because it was just boring and stupid and grump-inducing.
Yep.
And I kept hoping that the lead voice actor was Peter Falk, and he's not. It's just some guy that kind of sounds like Peter Falk.
Yeah.
All right. We got time for two more.
Dos Mos.
We're already over an hour. I don't care. We're going to go to an hour and 10 on this one. You're welcome, audience.
Yeah, that's our anniversary gift to you.
Yeah. Hey, guys. AmiYumi here, bringing you the best diners, drive-ins, and afterthought questions. Oh, that's adorable.
Oh, look at you and your frosted tips.
You should spray paint your face onto our wall. What opinions, if any, do you have on the poly lifestyle? Why does there seem to be such an intersection between fans of fantasy sci-fi things and people into polyamory? Thanks. Give the podcast a scritch for me. Well, the podcast.
Yeah. Well, I think the answer for why there's such an intersection there is that those who are interested in fantasy and sci-fi generally have a broader mind and are more open to things.
Oh, Lord.
And I think in order to be into poly, you really need to be more accepting of different lifestyles.
You're going to have to tilt that microphone way up to get how much you're snooting your nose right now.
Hold on. Let me get this microphone way up my ass.
God. You know, the poly lifestyle thing feels like it's gaining a whole lot of traction these days. I feel like no one talked about that shit in the 80s. And then for a long time, it was key parties and shit. And then you find out that your parents have been doing it for 30 years. And you're like, huh, I did not expect that.
Yeah, the I think the very first time I'd even heard about that was in the 2000s.
Yeah. And these days, it's beginning to gain a lot of social acceptance and traction. It's just like being, you know, I don't want to say it's the same thing as LGBT stuff, because poly is something you presumably can choose to do.
Yeah.
But whatever. It's gaining a lot of social traction, a lot of cachet.
There's definitely been a lot of shows with, like, poly focus, though usually that's less, like, because it's reality show stuff, it's less focused on the actual poly lifestyle and just let's have some titillation.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends who are actually poly, and because I'm friends with John, that means we share a lot of friends who are actually poly.
Yeah.
And so I've seen how it really works in real life, and it's not that big of a deal, and it's not a bunch of, it's not the stupid bullshit you see in reality shows. It's just, it's exactly the same shit, except happening with more people.
Yeah, it's just more conversations.
More conversations. That's exactly right. So what do I think about it? I'm all for it. I'm just like I am with any other social thing that people want to do. I'm fine with it. You want to be a juggalo? Fine. You want to be a poly juggalo? Go for it. I'm very accepting of the world.
If you want to be a poly juggalo, sure, why not?
Just please don't breed.
Just don't.
Let's see. So there you go. I'm all for it. And as to why it seems to be blending with the sci-fi or nerd community, I feel like that's not necessarily something that is a positive. I'm not saying it's bad that it's happening. What I'm saying is I feel like a lot of people in that community are super nerds, and the reason they're turning to polyamory isn't because it works for them, but because it makes logical sense.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, oh, I should be poly because that maximizes my sexual interaction times.
Oh, no. See, for me, it's poly makes sense because you just break it down logically and go, all right, can you love more than one person at the same time? Obviously, yeah. Yes.
Will it actually work in practice? I don't know, but logically, my brain tells me it should.
Yeah.
So that's a thing I think is fairly common in the science fiction role-playing game, generally in the nerd communities.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go.
And I think nerds are a little more outspoken about that because they're like, whatever, I'm already a weird person that likes goofy crap. I can go ahead and say, hey, I'm poly, and it's not an issue. But if you're like, I am a businessman with business issues, and if my boss found out that I was poly, I would be fired.
That's definitely true. So there you go. Anyway, I'd say we're both pretty much just pro-poly, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. All right, let's get to our last question of the day. This one comes to us from Dr. G, man of nerdology, from the Pulp 2 Pixel podcasts. Oh, we're accidentally plugging someone else.
Oh, no.
Whatever.
Enjoy you that. You owe us money now.
Send us your podcast for free. Hello, John and Jeff. While I have corresponded with you guys through Facebook and Twitter, I thought I would send you an official set of afterthought questions for a future episode, so here we go. Number one, if two of the RPGs you have reviewed so far were to have babies, using badly applied pundit square logic, which two... Oh, man. He's bringing all of that Carolinus Linnaeus shit in here. Which two would have the best offspring RPGs of setting and mechanics, etc., and which two would have the worst?
And which two would have the best offspring album?
What is the best Offspring album? Is it
Smash?
Is it Smash?
It's always
it
Smash.
Because I really like Ixnay.
I know you do, but it's Smash.
Okay. All right. If you're going to say it's Smash, fine. I'm a big Ixnay fan personally, but I think Smash also has a lot of strengths to it.
Yeah.
But I think we can probably agree that no other Offspring album even matters.
No, not really.
Yeah. All right. So it's got to be one of those two.
Yeah.
We can narrow that down. I don't know. If we combine two RPGs that we reviewed into a single super RPG, and then a single super terrible RPG. All right. Well, let's say that if you were to combine two of the RPGs that basically don't have rules. So if you're like, all right, let's combine Nobilis and Maid.
Nah, man. Get Nobilis and Numenon? No, not Numenon.
Newman?
Newman.
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 Jerry.
No. What the hell was it?
Numenon.
Was it Numenon?
Well, which one are you trying to think of? One that has like no rules at all, or one
the one
that...
where you're the fucking like grasshoppers that
the bugs. That's Numenon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I figured you're maybe reaching for Continuum, because I feel like Nobilis plus Continuum would be so insufferable.
Oh my god, I'm a time-traveling god of something.
Yeah, what's the one with the fucking fairies? What was that?
That was Delirium.
Delirium. All right, so I'm going to say let's...
Deliria.
Deliria. I'm going to say let's combine Deliria and Numenon.
There you go. The most esoteric shenanigans game, and it'll just be like, all right, you are definitely some kind of bug... You are able to find your way in this house, except maybe the house finds its way with you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Or you could also combine Deliria with Dragonborn, or Fireborn, or whatever that was. Remember
yeah.
that? The one where you play as otherkin dragons?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you combine Deliria and Fireborn, then you've got a game where your character is not only a dragon but doesn't realize it, but a fairy and doesn't realize it at the same time.
Oh my god, I'm a dragon fairy and I didn't realize it.
Yeah, that's just Tumblr the game.
Yeah.
So
I'm gonna go ahead and say for the best game, it's gonna be a combination between Gamma World and EverQuest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm on board with that. You're not just saying that because those two are next to each other on the shelf,
no,
though,
it's
are
not
you?
Just that I looked over and those were the two first two games that I saw. Definitely not.
Oh, let's see.
Definitely put thought into this.
I definitely am going to say it's between Don't Look Back, Terror is Never Far Behind, and Aberrant D20.
No, but Gamma World and EverQuest were both the two that had the most... like very specific
makes sense type rules.
Like, yeah, your rules were very contained within whatever you were.
I think mostly I could agree with that just because I really would like for there to be a 7th edition style Gamma World MMO.
Yeah. And so that's sort of what I'm looking at is you take EverQuest's expansive
shenanigans
and you do the Gamma World with it.
Right. I just realized that almost exists too.
Almost.
A Gamma World style MMO, because that would be what Champions Online is like. Where you take two superpower sets and smash them together to get your character.
Oh, that's also what the Secret World is like.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so there we go. Sort of answered your question in a crazy way. Part two of this question. Is it time for Donkey Talk? Gonna ride that donkey, donkey, down to the honky-tonky. It's gonna get funky, funky. Ow, ow. Gonna ride that donkey, donkey, down to the honky-tonky. All right, welcome to Donkey Talk, the show where we get on the air and talk about donkeys. Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
I am also doing very well. Normally, we would be not even doing an episode of Donkey Talk today because it is a Wednesday. We both technically have to be at work, but I have decided that it's a good idea for us to play hooky and skip work today.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's weird.
Well, it was easy for me to get you to do it. I was surprised how simple it was. I was like, John, don't go to work today. And you're like, yeah, it's fine. I won't.
Oh, yeah. No, I really don't need much more of an excuse than, hey, don't go to work to not go to work.
Right. So I guess we are like my favorite movie time hero, Ferris Bueller.
Oh, man. Did Ferris Bueller have a donkey in it?
No, it didn't.
What happened in Ferris Bueller? I can't even remember that movie.
He basically gaslights his friend for like an hour and a half.
Wow.
And then... pretends to be a sausage magnate. Oh, and then at a certain point, he gets up on top of a parade float, I think. And that's the only time you ever see black people in the entirety of the movie is that there's one shot of them dancing down some stairs.
Wow.
You're like, whoa, the black people of town. And then there's him up in his dumb leopard print vest up on top of a parade float singing Donka Shane.
Oh, is this an episode of Donka Talk? Donka Shane, darling, Donka Shane. Thank you for seeing.
Welcome to Donka Talk, the podcast where we get together once a week to talk about the German word for thank you.
Oh, yeah, this is so good.
It is a good word, yeah.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Donka.
It's nothing, it's nothing. We aren't even German, we're just being offensive.
Yeah, we're just being offensive for good times.
So anyway, that's the word Donka, which is German for thank you. I believe it's actually a diminutive form of a full term, which is probably Donka Shane.
Probably.
I mean, given that that's what the famous, what you said in Ferris Bueller's Day Off was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think of the word Donka? Would you like to work it into your regular conversations?
I usually do, actually.
Oh, you do? You actually have the word Donka in regular use?
Oh, yeah. Normally, I'll say Donka or Bitte.
Ooh, Bitte. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, I think, just means please.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so that has been an episode of Donka Talk. Thank you so much for listening. Or should I say, Donka so much for listening.
Hey.
Donka Shane, darling, Donka Shane. Thank you for seeing me again. Though we go on.
So, no, I think we can safely confirm that there are no donkeys in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which, you know, in itself counts as an episode of Donkey Talk. All we're doing is checking to see if there are donkeys in that particular
media.
Well,
that is a strike against Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
No donkeys means no watches from Donkey Talk, I can tell you that much for sure.
Oh, yeah.
This has been an episode of Donkey Talk. Thank you so much.
Gonna ride that donkey, donkey, down to the honky-tonky. It's gonna get funky, funky.
Ow, ow.
Gonna ride that donkey, donkey, down to the honky-tonky.